I'm an addict, and my name is Charlene.
Hey, Charlene.
And I want to first thank God for waking me up this morning and helping me to stay clean today. And I want to thank the convention committee for seeing in me what I couldn't see in myself and asking me to share my experience today, because it's truly an honor and a blessing. And the topic, why are we here? There are a lot of reasons today that I can say why I'm here. But I guess before I can tell you why I'm here today, I'm going to tell you how I got here. I got here as a result of 23 years of active using, 23 years of living life without the use of drugs. You know, me and my girlfriend rode down here. And one thing about riding down to Ocean City with another addict, you always get to reflect, you know, and we talked about some things, you know, and it brought up some memories. And I remember the very first time that I picked up a substance, and I liked the way it made me feel. I didn't like the way I felt the day after, but I liked the way I felt at that time. And so I continued to do that because growing up, I didn't fit anywhere. I didn't feel like I fitted in my home life. I didn't feel like I fit in at school, because I was always taller, darker. I grew up a chubby child. I had big feet. And I judged my appearance and feelings based on how other people look. And if I couldn't look like that, then I thought that I was not going to be accepted by other people. And so oftentimes I felt myself using just to hide my insecurities, my fear, and my self dislike of myself, because I didn't like myself. It was something I've always wanted to do, and that was to change who I was. And I tried many methods. I tried many drugs. I tried many people. I tried many things. And when it's all said and done, I was still left with me. And so I used more drugs. You know, and it talked about, before coming to Narcotics Anonymous, our lives had become unmanageable. It took me a long time to realize that my life was unmanageable. The first time I can remember unmanageability in my life was when I wasn't happy with what was going on at home. I would run away from home. So I'm running from problems, you know, and I would sleep in parks. I would sleep under the porches of people's houses. But I would come back home in a couple of days because I was hungry and I had no money. So my pattern has been, when things are not going the way I think they should be going, then I move on or I run. When I, they talked about placing the use ahead of the welfare of our family, wives, husbands, and our children. I had a son when I was 17 years old, and I didn't want to have that son. But my parents wouldn't sign for me to have an abortion. So I had that son, and I resented that son, because I had that son as a result of a rape. And to look at that son reminded me of how he got here. And so I would use, he would be little. I would leave him in the apartment, and I would go to the clubs. And I would call home praying that he was asleep and hadn't woke up in the middle of the night. And one night I came home, and he was standing at the front door crying. And I have no idea how long he stood there crying like that. But that wasn't the last time that I've done that. I did it again. And then it got to the point where having a child in my life was interfering with my lifestyle. And so I gave him to my mom. You know, I could dress it up and say, well, I let her keep him and raise him because she was more stable. I abandoned my child and gave him to my mother because I was incapable of taking care of him. And because of the feelings of guilt behind that, I used even more. And then I would have those twinge of guilt when I would call him prior to holidays and promise him, asking him what he wants. I'm going to be there. I'm going to have this. I'm going to have that. I never make it. I never have the money to buy those things. I missed out on a lot of important events in his life. And then I will feel guilty again, and then I will call with another excuse, another lie, another story. I will feel bad about myself again, and then I will start using again to take away those feelings, because I don't like feeling bad, you know. And so that went on for a long time, until it got to the point that when I would go visit my mother and when I walked into her house, if my son was home at the time, he would walk out. It's like he no longer could stand the sight of me. And I use again. You know, there has been often times when I had thought about maybe I was using too much. And so I would change drugs and start fresh with something new. But it would escalate to the same point with the drug that I just switched from. And so now I'm using multiple drugs, because now one drug is just not enough. You know, I needed to have a drug when I woke up in the morning. If I had cramps, I needed to have a drug. If I had a cold, there was a certain drug for that. There was a drug for everything. And I found a reason to use no matter what. And the first time that I remember using, not because I thought it was fun or to take away anything, when I was not even 18 years old, a man broke into my apartment and he raped me. He cut me up and left me in the closet to bleed to death. You know, and through God's grace and mercy, because that's the only way I can see why I'm here today, I was able to escape that. That's when I really had become dependent on using drugs, because at this time I couldn't sleep at night. And I remember a certain drug make me sleepy, so I started doing that. And I was able to sleep. So now drug had become a necessity for me now. And so I would go to work. I would get high before I go to work. I would go to the store. I would get high before I go to the store. I would go to a movie. It didn't matter what I did. I had to get high. In 1992, I got to the point where I really could no longer stay in Charlene. So I moved. I got me a new set of friends. I got me a new address. I got me a new job. And I thought everything was going to be okay. If I just stay away from them people that use all the time like me, if I can go someplace where nobody know me, then maybe I'll have a chance and not use as much. Because I wasn't ready to stop. But what happened was, I took me wherever I went. And you know, we can identify each other when we out on the street. And it did not take me long to find out where it was and who had it. And it didn't take them long to know that I was a guarantee. They'd be on my job and I get paid. I go to the bank, they go with me, I cash my check, I turn it over. I'm already building on credit for the next paycheck. So when that paycheck comes, I'm turning that back over, and that's how I live. I had nothing to eat. I had to walk to work because I no longer had money to catch the bus. I was wearing the same pair of pants. I started wearing black jeans. I wear the same pair of pants every day because you can't see the dirt in black jeans. You know, I had kept my hair cut real short, so I didn't have to worry about the perm, and I didn't have to worry about going to the hairdresser. I didn't have to worry about any of those things. I had the bare necessities because I couldn't afford to do anything better. You know, using had just become a total way of life. And one morning, one weekend, I took the braids out my hair. I was going to perm my hair, and it was Thanksgiving weekend, and for the first time in many years, I was going to go home for Thanksgiving. I never made it home for Thanksgiving that year. I stole a jug of wine from my job. I said, here's one more for the road. I was getting ready to be evicted again. I was getting ready to lose my job again. And at that point, I felt hopeless and helpless, and I didn't know that there was another way. I had no idea about a 12-step program. So the only way that I knew how to stop living the way that I was living and to stop doing what I was doing, I attempted suicide. Finality. That would be the end. I wouldn't have to live like this anymore. You know, and I'm kind of dramatic in some ways. Because I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't quite have the courage to do it. So I had everything that I was going to need. I had the razor blade. I had the alcohol. I had the antidepressant. I had all the drugs that I wanted. And I had them on a tray. So every room that I went to, I carried all this stuff on a tray. Because I never knew when that moment was going to hit, when I was going to get that courage. And I didn't want to have to stop and go get it. Because I might change my mind. And I carried around this tray. And it started on a Wednesday night. And then I started watching TV. And I started watching those commercials where they fry the eggs and they talk about this is drug, this is your brain, and they give you the phone number. And I wrote it down and never called anybody. I started watching movies, and they was good movies. I said, well, I can't do it now because I want to watch this movie. Monday morning, my mother called me. They asked me what happened. Why didn't I show up? And I told her that I was depressed. And my mother asked me, what do you have to be depressed about? She didn't know the life that I was living. I wouldn't let them see that side of me. So she had no idea that I was doing the things that I was doing. And I don't know what happened after that conversation, but I asked my mom, I need you to come see about me. And I didn't ask her to come see about me because I wanted some help. At that moment, I decided that I was going to go ahead and proceed with this suicide attempt. And because I had isolated for so long, I was afraid my body was going to decompose in that apartment before anybody had missed me. And that was my reason for asking her to come. And my mother must have detected something in my voice because within 45 minutes, my mother was from Virginia to Northeast knocking on my door. And I'm thinking it's my neighbor. And I had just slit my wrist. I had just took my pills. I had just chased it with the alcohol. And when I looked at that peephole and saw that it was my mother, it's like, oh, what do I do? So I go wrap some toilet paper around my wrist and I sit there talking to my mother, watching all my children, hadn't told her nothing about what I had just done. And when I finally talked to my mom and told her what I had done, she called my hospital insurance because I was employed for the moment and I had insurance. She called JW. She rushed me to the hospital. By the time they checked me in, unconsciousness was setting in. My mother said her God told her, go see about your daughter. Now, had she ignored her God, I wouldn't be standing here today. And when I got there, they pumped my stomach, and 2 days later, I came to, and there was two people standing next to me in white coats with a clipboard asking me, did I want to admit myself into detox? And I had to think about my answer because I wasn't sure if I was ready to stop using. All I know is that I was tired of living the way I was living. And I didn't know that there was another way. But I remember that I owe the drug man. I'm behind in my rent. I'm on the verge of losing my job. Why not? It was a 7-day detox program. At the end of those 7 days, they wouldn't let me go because they thought I was still suicidal. They called my insurance and got verification for me to stay another 7 days. I sat in those rooms, I sat in those shops being very close-minded, but still in denial about the fact that I had a problem. Thank God for H&I. They brought an H&I meeting there, and it was this white chick. She was 21 years old with 5 years clean with a story that was out of this world. And all I kept saying, oh my gosh. And that was my hope. Because I said, if she can do it, there was hope that I could do it. And it was at that moment that I became open. Just a little bit. Just enough so I had a little bit of hope that when I walked out of that GW hospital, that I wouldn't have to use again. But that was the hardest thing for me to do because one of the things they told me was I had to stay away from people, places, and things. So I felt like I was going to be a loner. I was going to be all by myself. And so I got what they suggested, a temporary sponsor. And I got that. And she took me around with her for 2 weeks, and then she let me go. Because I had already found out the meetings that were circled for me to go to in my area. I went to meetings. I sat in the back. I wouldn't talk or anything. I wouldn't even raise my hand when they announced for newcomers because I didn't want to say that I was an addict. So when I finally raised my hand, I raised my hand and said, I'm Charlie, I'm a newcomer. because I'm in denial about being an addict, you know, but as a result of keep coming back, I realized that when I did my first step, I realized that I was an addict, that I was unmanageable. My life was going down the tubes, and I did not know how to live life on life's terms without the use of drugs. And I didn't think that was possible. I thought everybody got high. Just that everybody that I was around got high. I wasn't around other kind of people, you know. And so I cried like a baby when I wrote that first step, because it was at that time that I came out of denial. I am an addict, you know. And so that started my process. And it's been an adventure, to say the least. You know, all the things that they said that was going to happen has happened to me. You know, I did the things that were suggested to do when I first got here. And I'm doing some of those things today. I can't say I'm doing all of them because I'm not. You know, that job that I was on, that I was on the verge of getting fired from, I'm back on that job. That son that I had abandoned, I'm back in his life, actively back in his life. You know, there was a time when my son couldn't address me as anything because I was nothing to him. My son calls me mom today. He has keys to my house. He has keys to my car. I have keys to his car. You know, when he has problems, he calls me today. You know, when I came back in his life, he was 18 years old. When I left, he was 7. So I miss all of those important events except his high school graduation. I made it a point to spend a night over my mother's house and make sure that I would show up for his high school graduation, because I hadn't been to any other activities in his life before. Because using took precedence over things like that. You know, I didn't have time to go to PTA meetings and Boy Scout activities. I didn't have time to do that. I couldn't stop using long enough. Today, my life is different, you know. My life is real different today. I have a network. I still go to meetings. I'm still in service. And the biggest significant part of my life is as a result of working the steps and applying them in my life. I'm no longer that person that I came in here in 1992. Still don't quite love myself as much as I should, but it's a process, and I'm getting there, you know. And I know I'm getting there because I'm standing in front of you with no makeup on. That's a big deal for me, because I like to cover up things that I think are imperfection, and I cover it up. So today I'm trying to be myself. You know, the good, bad, and the indifference. I'm trying to accept who I am today. And that's why I'm here. I'm here today so that when life come at me in all directions, that I don't have to contemplate suicide today. You know, this program has given me the tools to go through what I need to go through. And I've gone through some things in this program. You know, I've gone through bankruptcy. I've gone through a separation. I've gone through losing a good job, to getting a messed up job, to getting that good job back. You know, I'm financially manageable again today. And the biggest plus in my life is that I have an awesome relationship with my God. Because it has only been through him that I've been able to endure and go through the things that I've gone through and not change my clean date. Because, see, that's important for me, because it took me a long time to get 30 days. I thought 30 days would never get here. I cried those whole first 30 days because I wanted to use so bad, and I was afraid to use. Because the counselor told me that if I pick up, I'll pick up where I left off. And I left off attempting suicide. And if God had intervened, that would have been the end of Charlene. That would have been the end of my story. You know, but today, I have another story today, you know. And it's only as a result of this program So life is good for me today, and I'm not as nervous now. I guess that's because I can say, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Charlene. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Tyrone.
Good afternoon, family. I'm Tyrone, and I'm truly a blessed daddy. And I thought I was going to share on tolerance. But it's okay. Because I brought the children with me today. And I was just thinking about the tolerance that was happening with me. Coming up here, a trash truck hit the van and knocked the window off, the mirror off. And I was trying to deal with that because the kids were scared. And when we got here, the people said, well, we can't let you into your condominium now because you got here too late. You got to go find a hotel. But that's the kind of thing that happens. And it just happens. Because that's how life is. But I couldn't explain that to the kids because they didn't want to hear that. I guess I'll talk a little bit about me. I'm a Vietnam veteran. It's funny what she was saying about suicide and stuff like that. I was in Vietnam in 68, 69, and 70. My mom got sick of me and made me go into service and sign me in before I was 17. And when the gentleman said something to her about my age, she said, well, I know when I had it. So that was the end of that. So I was 16 years old and I was in the United States Army and I was with a whole bunch of grown men and I was still a child. My high school class was still in high school. But they turned me into a lean, mean fighting machine and I did a lot of bad things to stay alive. I think about it now because I suffer from post-traumatic stress. Because for a long time, I didn't want to talk about some of the things that I had to do while I was over there. I just didn't want to talk about it. The nightmares had gone away, the sweats had gone away, and I didn't want to talk about running over children and shooting people. I just didn't want to talk about it. When I came home in 1970, my graduating class in Spingarn was just graduating. But I was supposed to be better than them because I'm a man. I've been in the Army. Y'all taught me how to do this thing. I was a combat engineer demolition specialist, so I blew up stuff. When I came home from the service, my addiction picked up right where I left off at. It only picked up I got high in the Army. I got high with Vietnam. I got high before Vietnam. I just didn't want to give a long drug log. What I wanted to talk about something else besides my addiction. Because I suffer from a mental illness. And I never hear anybody talk about that. You know, I never hear anybody talk about severe depression, schizophrenia, suicidal, homicidal. Now take all that and throw addiction in with it. Because that's me. You know, I have 10 girls and 5 boys. The baby is 6, the oldest girl is 36. I was a father at 14. I was trying to find out just when did all this craziness start with me. So I used to my feelings. You know what I'm saying? I used to my feelings. I used when I wanted to use. I used when I didn't want to use. I just used and used and used and used. In 92, I went to a mental hospital in Houston, Texas, because the post office was about sick of me getting high at the post office. They said, we're not going to fire you. We're going to send you to a mental hospital because you're good and crazy. I said, all right. So I went to this doctor in Houston, Texas. And the psychiatrist told me, he said, we need to find out where some of this behavior came from. So I said, okay. So stuff that I buried deep inside of me that I don't want nobody to know, I don't want nobody to know. And he had me in a session, and he got inside of me. I never let nobody inside of me the way I let that doctor inside of me. I told him about being 5 years old with my sister Valerie and being sexually molested. I told him how I had all those children because I always wanted to prove that I was a man. I told him how even when I went in the service, I volunteered for Vietnam because I wanted to prove I was a man. Me being sexually molested back then was still bothering me, even though I had buried it subconsciously. It was hidden away. And it came out inappropriately in all sorts of behavior. Today I'm okay with that. Today I have a female psychiatrist. The males are okay, but I got a female psychiatrist. I got 10 daughters. I need a lot of help. Because today I see that the children are like me. You know, I see little parts of them in them, I see me. And that sometimes bothers me. But today I can talk about it. Today I'm not scared to talk about it. Today it's okay for me to say, when I was 5 years old, I was sexually molested. Because for a long time, I blamed that on me. The psychiatrist said, that wasn't your fault, man. That was that crazy person's fault. You were just 5 years old. But that's what you call a deep-rooted issue that you don't like to talk about. And I carried that facade and that mask for a long time, not wanting anyone to know. And then people say, well, why did he use? It's none of your business why I use. I use because you use and because I use. We use and reuse until we use ourselves up. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Today, I'm in service, as she said. I have a home group, a network. I try to give back what was so easily given to me. Today, I don't mind going to the psychiatrist and telling them that I feel like I want to do this or I feel like I want to do that. Because when you tell somebody you feel like it, you don't have to do it. You know, pain shared is shared is pain lessened. And today, Narcotics Anonymous, never again, never alone. That means a whole lot to me. And I'm not, you know, I don't have no problem hugging men, hugging ladies. I'm getting ready to go downstairs and get on the hug squad and hug everybody. I didn't like coming to the convention today, this year, and having to babysit. But I signed them up for every trip I could find. Every trip, I said, just give me everything. Cost, don't matter how much it costs. Because I had to leave the hotel and move to the condominium. They had broke the hotel's bathroom. I said, how could y'all break a bathroom? They lost the key. The lady said, I need $10 for that key that was lost. I said, here, man, here's the $10. But I'm still going to enjoy this convention. In spite of that. Because that man downstairs said, man, let me your blessings. He just didn't know how many blessings I had. Because some of the children are off the hook. I asked my 36-year-old daughter, I said, why did you wait till you get 36 years old to snort heroin? She said, well, Daddy, you've been there. Can you help me? I said, I'm going to help you, but before I help you, you're going to have to let your husband go because that's your chief supplier. Now, you're willing to do that. That's the 36-year-old. She's still sniffing that stuff. The 33-year-old daughter, she's smoking crack. And she told me, she said, I know about NA, I know you this and you that, but I ain't ready. It's okay. Call your father when you're ready. If you're ready. And if you don't call, and I never hear from you again, I know what can crack and kill. And that's a bad thing to say to your children. My 25-year-old son is locked up over D.C. jail. The 23-year-old is in West Virginia. And I always look at myself with my addiction and what I did and say, well, where did I go wrong? Is it something else I could have done? But I can't beat myself up today. You know, I can't let the children hold me hostage over my addiction that's no longer active. When they tell me, well, you used to do this and you used to do that, I say, what's the main word in that whole sentence? I used to do it. What am I doing now? You know, stop it. You know, I always tell them, stop hating. Start duplicating. Be like your dad now. Because now I feel good about myself. You know, now I walk that walk and talk that talk. I want to thank the committee for asking me to share. I know them kids tearing up that hotel room. I'm going to add it, Tyrone.
Thank you, Tyrone. Before we open up the meeting to those who would like to share, I ask that you come up to the podium one at a time, because there's other addicts that need to share. Meeting's open. Peggy? Anybody like to come up and share? Okay. We're going to close the meeting.